It is a great blessing and privilege to be engaged in worship with you this morning. I do ask for continued interest in your prayers what time we stand before you. I'd like to draw your mind this morning to account found in Luke chapter 7. My mind has been stirred on this particular passage and lesson ever since last weekend from some of the things that Brother Luke preached. He didn't exactly spend much time here, but I want to look at this lesson this morning in a very perhaps different way than we ever have before. The lesson begins in verse 36 of Luke chapter 7. It goes to the end of the chapter, and it's the story of Christ eating at a Pharisee's house by the name of Simon. And while he's there, a woman comes in and does a service to the master. And then the rest of the account is a conversation that the Lord has with different ones that are there over what happened and over the importance of it. Now, before we get into this story, we've talked about this before, but it's mainly been from the perspective of what happened. You know, it's this happened and this means this, this happened and this means this. This morning, I don't really want to talk so much about what happened as opposed to how it happened and the things that brought some of these things to pass. In this story, Jesus is having a meal at a Pharisee's house, and a woman comes in, and the Bible specifically tells us that this woman is a sinner. Now, we know from Scripture that all of us are sinners, but this particular word, this particular expression, is designed to show us that she was a woman who was known publicly for her sins. And I'd like to say that not all sins are the same. I've heard people say, well, sin is sin, and all sin is bad, and I know what people mean, that one sin is enough to damn anybody, but friends, there is a distinction of sins. It's a whole lot better for a child of God if his sins are not of the public, very reproachful kind. Now, I may have wicked thoughts, and those are sins. I may have foolish thoughts, and those are sins. But if I act upon some of my thoughts, that sin is made much worse, the reproach is much higher, and the consequences are greater. And this woman had committed the kind of sins where there were a lot of great consequences. And I'd like to be very clear about a point that is very overlooked in the world we live in today. There are consequences for what we do, good and bad. If we do things, we should expect certain things are going to happen. If we do good things, we should expect to be blessed for them. If we do bad things, we should expect to be punished for them. My children, I hope by this point, know that if they do what mommy and daddy tell them, that they're going to have a pretty pleasant day. And they ought to know that if they don't do what we tell them, it's going to be a very unpleasant day. Now, it's a lesson still ongoing, and it will continue to be ongoing, kind of like it is for us as God's children. We have to keep learning the same lessons over and over again. I mean, how many of you in 2017 committed the same sins you committed in 2016? Did it turn out any different? It didn't for me. You would hope that by 2018, I'd say, you know what, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to do something different this year. I'm not going to do what I did last year that brought these miserable things upon me. Now, this woman was known as a sinner. She was someone who was, and the most likely scenario, the Bible doesn't tell us, but the most likely scenario is that she was a woman who the Bible would call a harlot, someone who is very known in the city for her behavior and for her occupation. But we don't know that, but she is known to be a sinner. Now, I want you to consider this circumstance. Jesus is having a meal in a Pharisee's house. Now, there were times he had meals in publicans' houses. There were times that he had meals in people's houses that were his family. Jesus ate with all different kinds of people. What's interesting is that some of the people he ate with couldn't care less about some of the other people that he ate with. This Pharisee wouldn't be caught dead in the same room with this woman. And this woman probably was very fearful to be in the same room as this Pharisee, knowing that she was known in these parts for the kind of life that she led. And my point is this, whether we ever start to think that the Lord only loves the kind of sinners that we love, I want to tell you, friends, I'm thankful that God is a lover of many different kinds of sinners. I'm thankful that He came in this world not to save the kinds of sinners that I can put up with, but the kinds of sinners that He loves. And if you're honest, you know that there are certain kind of sinners you can put up with better than others. I mean, let's just be honest. If someone's a liar, but he tells a good story, he's fun to be around, ain't he? I mean, you know he's a liar. You know his story is nothing but a big lie. But boy, he tells a good story. He's fun to be around. But you know, I know some people that if they know you're a liar, they won't have anything to do with you. So see, there's someone you might get along with if somebody else doesn't. You might have people in your family that commit the kind of things that maybe you're like, well, I know that's a sin, but I'll put up with it. But the things that go on in your family, I'm not putting up with that. I mean, all of us have these things in our mind. And I'm sure the Pharisee did not like this woman coming into her house. And I'm sure this woman was very scared to come into this man's house. But yet she comes. Jesus is not in the field. He's not in the wilderness. He is in a man's house that this woman would not be in, that this woman would not be invited to. But she comes in because she has a desire to be with her master. When she comes in, she stands behind him. And while she stands behind him, she starts crying. And as she's crying, she begins to wipe and anoint Jesus' feet with her tears, to dry the tears with the hairs of her head, to anoint his feet with oil. And while this is going on, Jesus, I'm sure, was sitting there as God, knowing exactly what was going through this woman's mind. And yet everybody else who's sitting there is shocked. They're shocked, first of all, that she's even there. But then they're shocked because how in the world is this going on? Notice what it says, I believe, in verse 40. Simon says some things to himself. He has a conversation with himself. And this is what he says. This man, if he were a prophet, he'd know what manner this woman is that touches him, for she's a sinner. In other words, we thought this man was something special, but he doesn't even know what's going on in this town. He doesn't even know what's going on in our own community. How can he be special? How can he be a prophet? Jesus answers Simon's thoughts. Jesus actually speaks to him and says, Simon, I have somewhat to say unto thee. And he says, well, Master, say on. He says, a certain man had two creditors. One owed him 500 pence, the other one 50. And when they had nothing to pay, he frankly forgave them both. Who then will love him most? And the Pharisee, Simon, says, well, I suppose he to whom he forgave the most. And he says, thou hast rightly said. Now, before we go on to the next verse, I'd like to just pause and consider what just happened. You would think that whenever the Lord does something time and time again, that eventually we'd get the point, but we don't. And before we get too hard on old Simon, I'm going to tell you, a lot of us are like Simon. We have thoughts, we have feelings, we have all these emotions going down deep. And we think that nobody knows what it is that we're thinking, what it is that we're doing, how it is that we feel. Now, I know some of us are better at hiding it than others. I mean, I know some people that when I preach, it's obvious if they like it. I know some people when I preach, it's obvious if they don't. I mean, it's obvious if someone's smiling that unless they're a really good liar, they really like what I'm saying. And I've seen some people who are like, I dare you to bless me, preacher. Just go right ahead and try. I mean, those cases are pretty obvious. But the people who sit there and their face is blank, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what they think. There's some people that when I talk to them, I don't know if they like me or not. But I'll tell you this, no matter how good or bad we are at hiding what we think and hiding how we feel, the Lord always knows and the Lord always sees. The Apostle Paul writes in Hebrews 4 and about verse 12, he says, for the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing, even dividing asunder the soul and the spirit, the joints and the marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and the intents of the heart. Jesus knows the thoughts and the intents of our heart. And in verse 13, makes it even clearer. Hebrews 4:13 says, neither is there any creature that is not manifest in his sight, but all things are naked and opened unto the eyes of him with whom we have to do. There's nothing he doesn't see. There's nothing he's not aware of. There's nothing he can't perceive that goes on, whether outward or inward, he sees and knows it all. There's a lot that goes on in this world today, much of which we think we know, we think we understand, but friends, he sees everything we see and so much more, and he knows it all. And many times, Jesus would answer people according to the thoughts of their heart, answer people according to the things that they were going through their mind and their spirit. You would think by eventually people would get the point, but they don't. Because Simon's sitting here having a conversation with himself, doubting who Jesus is, and Jesus says, well, let me ask you something, Simon. Let me ask you about a certain situation. Let's think about exactly what Jesus says and how it happened. Jesus is going to bring an illustration to Simon that Simon has no idea is about him and this woman. He talks about a man who has people who owe him money. And one owes a little bit, one owes a lot. But you know, friends, whether you owe a little bit or whether you owe a lot, at the end of the day, we're all broke. At the end of the day, we have nothing to pay. And you know, the point isn't whether we're a big sinner or a little sinner in this story. The point in this story is how you feel about yourself. I'm going to tell you all, friends, we're more bankrupt than we've ever given ourselves credit for. We're more in debt than we have ever possibly thought. You know, I don't look at it, I don't pay attention to it. It's way too depressing. I don't know what we're up to in this country in debt. I know it's in the tens of trillions of dollars. I mean, it may be pushing $30 trillion at this point. I don't know. We're way in debt. Let me put it this way. The American government ain't got nothing on God's family when it comes to the debt we owed God. We were so far in debt, we didn't have anything to pay. But unfortunately for us, in our old flesh, what is it we like to do? We like to say, well, I'm not that bad, am I? I mean, I know others that are worse than I am. I'm not really that bad. You know, there's a saying that I've heard all my life. There's people I work with. I think it comes out just about every day. And it's a saying that in nature might have some merit for a time. But there's a time when it doesn't have any merit anymore. You've heard the old saying, when a lion comes or when a bear comes or something's chasing us, I don't have to outrun the lion. I don't have to outrun the bear. I just have to outrun you. Have you heard that? Point being, he's going to eat you and I'm going to get away. You know that will only work for so long. Eventually, if you're one of the slower ones in the herd after the lion or the bear, whoever it is eating all the slow ones, guess who's left? It's you. Well, friends, our adversary, the devil, is what? He's as a roaring lion, walking to and fro in the earth, seeing whom he may devour, seeing who he can consume. Now, if our only goal in life is to be faster than that guy, just outrun that guy and let the devil catch him, what happens after the devil catches him? Who's next? You are. The point isn't to outrun the slowest person. The point is to stay on pace the best we can with Jesus Christ. To run our race as He ran it. To run it with patience like He ran it. To run it with joy, looking unto that which is before us as He did. Now, Simon is a Pharisee, and I'm sure that if he was pressed on the matter, he might say, yeah, I've committed a few sins, but they're small. I mean, they're minor. It's like the Pharisee in, Luke 18. The two men went up to the temple to pray, one a publican, the other a Pharisee. Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, and he said, God, I thank Thee that I'm not as other men are. I thank Thee that I'm not an extortioner, a murderer. I fast twice in the week. I give tithes of all that I possess. And I thank Thee that I'm not, well, like this guy here. I mean, I'm glad I'm not like him. You know, the Pharisee there probably would admit, yeah, I've made a few mistakes, but they're small. I've had a few problems in my life, but they've been very minor. I'm not like this guy over here. Friends, that's a mental perspective. And Simon's perspective was like somebody who only owed a little bit. And it doesn't matter whether your perspective is you think you're a big sinner or not. At the end of the day, we're all broke. Now, let's make this point as well. It's more than that just we're all broke. We need to see ourselves as being the lowest of the low. We need to see ourselves as being the vilest of the vile. You may say, but preacher, I'm not a public sinner like this woman was. I'm not someone who is guilty of the things that she was guilty of. That may be true. That may be true that you have never been had a life of ill repute in that way. It may be that you've never had the types of sins that other people have had. But in our mind, in our perspective, we need to have the same mindset, the same mentality that the Apostle Paul had. What did he say in 1 Timothy 1:15 after he said, this is a faithful saying and worthy of all acceptation, that Christ Jesus came into this world to save sinners? Is that where it ends? Is that the end of the thought? Is that the end of the statement? I mean, it's wonderful to think that Christ Jesus came into this world to save sinners. But the end of that thought should be this: of whom I am chief. You know, I've heard a lot of people say that Paul really was the chief of sinners because he was guilty of murdering Stephen, he was guilty of imprisoning the church of God, and he did all those things as Saul of Tarsus. But I want you to consider what the Apostle Paul did not say. The Apostle Paul did not say, of whom I was chief. He said, of whom I am chief. He's not talking about how I was. He said, I'm talking about how I still am. Go with me to another place. Romans 7, about verse 25. The Apostle Paul has this to say. He says, oh, wretched man that I what? That I am. Not that I was, not when I was killing Stephen, not when I was imprisoning the church of God. He said, oh, wretched man that I am. And why is he wretched? He said, "Who shall deliver me from the body of this death?" He talks about this body that's like a ball and a chain that drags him down every day. A body that every time he wakes up, he tries to do better, and somehow sin is still present with him. A body that somehow, though he has a mind to serve Christ, yet in him that is in his flesh dwelleth no good thing. Friends, that is the state of all of us, and it should be the mindset of all of us, that I am still a wretched man. I am still the chief of sinners, and if there's anybody that needs Jesus Christ more than anybody else, it's me. That's the kind of mindset and mentality we should have. Why? I mean, Simon answers the question right. If you got two people that owe money, who's going to love the creditor the most when he forgives them? The answer is simple. He to whom he forgave the most. How do you and I love Jesus Christ more? How do you and I serve Jesus Christ more? Is it by thinking we're better than that publican over there? Is it by thinking, well, I'm not the slowest one in the herd. The devil's not going to catch me. He's going to catch all these others. That's not how we love God more. We love God the most. We love Him more whenever we see in our mind that He had to reach down the farthest to get me. He had to reach down from heaven the lowest to scoop me out to bring me to where He is. This woman was very cognizant of her sins. This woman was very well aware of her problems. But she was also very well aware of who Jesus was. She was very well aware of His stature, of His condition. Because notice what Jesus says, and I want you to notice how this happens. He's been talking to Simon when he asked him about the creditors. But notice verse 46. In verse 46, it says, Jesus turned to the woman and said unto Simon. You know, this is something that I guarantee if you do this in life, you're going to infuriate somebody. It's infuriating somebody when you talk to them, but you're not looking at them. It's infuriating to somebody when you're not giving them your undivided attention. They want you to look at them, talk to them, that you are, that they're the center of your world. That's how people operate. And Jesus is talking to Simon, but he's not looking at him. He's looking at the woman. But he does it for a reason. Notice how this happens. I'm going to talk to you, Simon, but I want you to look where I'm looking. He turns to the woman. He says, "Seest thou this woman? Look where I'm looking. Look at who I'm looking at. When she walked in here, what did you think? Well, that's a sinner. She's a rotten woman. She's lived a scandalous life. How dare she come into my house? How dare this man think he's somebody and let this woman touch him? I mean, this shouldn't go on. This shouldn't happen." He says, "Do you see this woman? Go back in time with me. When I came into thine house, thou gavest me no water where I could wash my feet. But this woman has washed my feet with the tears that she has shed. When I came in, thou gavest me no kiss. This woman, from the time I came in, hath not ceased to kiss my feet. My head with oil thou didst not anoint, but this woman has anointed my feet with oil. And I say unto you that her sins, though they be many, they are forgiven." He says, "Simon, look at what I'm looking at. Do you see the lesson? Do you see the illustration? Yes, she has sinned a lot. But she understands how much in need she is, and she has loved a lot. You see yourself, you don't see yourself as very bad off. And because you don't see yourself as very bad off, you've loved just a little." Friends, when it comes to our lives, we need to see that whether we're up or down, we're bad off and we need Him. It doesn't matter if you've had the greatest year financially you've ever had. You need Him as much now as you ever have. It doesn't matter if you've had the greatest health and you're in the greatest physical condition. You need Him now more than you ever have. And I'd like to say this. There are two kinds of people in this world. There are two kinds of disciples in this world. There's really two kinds of people, sheep and goats. But let's not talk about that this morning. My point is this. There's two kinds of disciples. Two kinds of mentalities that people can have. One of those mentalities is they're more apt to draw nigh unto God, to have a dependence upon Christ when things are going badly in their life. They're the kind of people that when times are tough, they say, "I need Him." And they perk up and they start attending, they start praying, they read their Bible, they do all the things that we should be doing all the time because they're in need and they see they're in need. Other people are the very opposite. They get down. They have hard times. And what happens? One, they may blame God. They may complain against God. They may say, oh, why is this happening to me? And it causes them to be bitter and it drives them further away. And these same people are the exact opposite in bad times, and they're the same exact opposite in good times. The person who draws nigh unto God in good times is the kind of person that when things are going well, he doesn't need anything. He's fat, he's happy, he's full, he's content. He doesn't need anything. He doesn't think about church. He doesn't think about God's service because I have everything that I need. He's like the rich man who said to himself, I've got all these barns and they're full. What am I going to do? Well, I'm just going to pull down my barns. I'm a big builder, build bigger barns and say to my soul, soul, thou hast much laid up for many years. Eat, drink, be happy. You got all you need. What kind of mindset is that? Jesus says that's a fool's mindset. He says, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. We don't know what's going to happen in life. We don't know what's going to happen in the very next moment, the very next hour. Forget the entire year of 2018. I don't know what's going to happen today or tomorrow. But here's one thing I do know. Whether it's today, tomorrow, right now, next hour, next moment, next year, it doesn't matter. I need Him as much now as I ever have. But yet, the same people that will blame God, complain against God, cry out, why is all this happening to me? They're willing to serve God as long as things are going well. As long as things are going well, I'll serve Him. As long as the preacher's preaching and making me happy, that's fine. Oh, preacher, you shouldn't preach about that. How dare you preach about that? Oh, I'm not coming back. You may have not seen this. I have. I've seen where somebody gets their feelings hurt because things aren't going well. They get their feelings hurt because somebody gets excluded or whatever the case may be. But as long as things are going well, well, I'll be there. As long as things are going well, I'll serve the Lord. These are the two kinds of people in this world. Simon was one of those ones who things were going well. Every time that someone addressed him on the street, they addressed him as rabbi. They addressed him as master. I mean, he was a ruler, a scribe, a Pharisee. Somebody the people sought after as one who's supposed to be a master and a teacher of the law. And as long as things are going well, as long as he has his seat, as long as he has his authority, his position, he's happy. But what happens when those same people have their seats, authority, position, and all the things taken away from them? Why did the Pharisees hate Jesus so much? Why did all these religious rulers hate him so much? Because he showed the people what kind of men they really were. And they didn't like the fact that their power, their authority was being taken away. I'm going to tell you something, friends. If any of us have any power or any authority in this world, we need to always honor the one who gave it and from where it came. These Pharisees weren't doing that. So as long as things are going well, well, I'm keep serving the Lord. If things are going bad, how dare this man be like this? Woman's on the other side of the spectrum. She realizes she needs the Lord. Friends, we need to be somewhere in between. That whether we're up or whether we're down, we serve the Lord. Whether we're having good times or bad, we serve the Lord. And the best way to do that is to be like this woman in the sense that we see how much we need Him. Not just some of the time, but all the time. So he's talking to Simon, but he's looking at the woman. And he says to this woman, one of the last things he said is he says, thy sins are forgiven thee. Immediately, everybody who's there starts talking amongst themselves again, talking within themselves. They haven't learned that, hey, did you see what happened 5 minutes ago? Simon didn't say anything, but this guy told Simon what he was thinking. You would think we would learn. But no, they start talking. Who is this that forgiveth sins also? Who in the world does he think he is? It's the same thing Simon said earlier. What kind of man does he think he is? First of all, he lets this woman touch him. Now he thinks he's the kind of man who can forgive sins. This is the same thing that happened in, Mark 2? In Mark 2, you had a man who was sick of the palsy. Couldn't walk. And he had four friends who carried him in a bed to the house where the Lord was. When they get there, the house is full. They can't get in. So they just say, well, sorry, buddy. They pack up and they go home. Is that what they do? No. It's not what they do. They carry their friend up on the roof. They break up the roof. They open it up and they let the man down into the place where Jesus lay. Now, you may say, well, this is a very easy point for you to make on a Saturday morning service to a Saturday morning crowd. That may be true, but all of us have our problems and all of us are prone to shortcomings and doubts. Isn't it easy sometimes to say, well, I tried? Isn't it easy sometimes to say, well, I mean, it just didn't work out. I mean, I tried, but it just didn't work out. You know, it's easy sometimes to say, well, I was going to go to church, but, you know, something's happened this week. It just didn't work out. You know, I made a New Year's resolution to read my Bible through this year, and, man, life just got so busy. And then I got into some stuff that was just so hard, and, yeah, it just didn't work out. You know, these men were undeterred. They said, look, you're our friend. We told you we're going to take you to Jesus. We're going to get you there. They let him down through the roof to the place where Jesus lay. They were undeterred. And Jesus, looking up, it doesn't say that when he beheld the man's faith, it says when he saw their faith. You realize how many people's lives can be blessed because of our faith? How many lives may be touched because of our kind of confidence, trust, and assurance in Christ? I mean, think about what's coming this year. Think about all the forecast of doom and gloom that people are expecting. If you've been living in a box or not been paying attention to the news, let me depress you for about 15 seconds and then pick you right back up. They're predicting nuclear war sometime this year. They're predicting a full-scale war in this country with some other major world powers. They're predicting a mini to major crash in the world economic markets based on this unprecedented boom we've had. They're predicting that 2018 is going to be a year of, you know, things going down in one catastrophe after another. People who study the earth, people who study earthquakes and things like that say big ones are coming, volcanoes are going to erupt. I mean, if you listen to what men are saying, this is just going to be a terrible year. But you know what happens if people see you in the midst of trials and tribulations with your head held high? You know what people are going to do if they see you in the midst of all kind of wars and commotions with a spirit of peace and a spirit of joy, having love towards God no matter the circumstance? People are going to say, what's gotten into that guy? I mean, what's wrong with him? I mean, does he know what's going on? Then you tell somebody, yes, I know what's going on, but here's what I do know. No matter what happens, the Lord's still here. No matter what happens, the Lord's promises still stand sure. And no matter what happens, we're going to live with Him one day. And because of that, I'm not worried about it. I'm not concerned about it. Friends, if I lose it all today or tomorrow, may I have the strength to say as Job did, naked came I into this world. Naked I'm going to leave this world. The Lord gave. The Lord had taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. It doesn't matter what happens, friends. His name is blessed at all times and all seasons. And I need to honor Him for all that He's done for me. Jesus looks up and He sees their faith. And He's going to bless this man because of their faith. May folks be blessed because of our faith. May Jesus' life and His love be manifest and touch the people that we love and the people we live around because of the faith that we have. He says, man, I say unto thee, thy sins be forgiven thee. And the Pharisees and others that were in the house, they communed with themselves. They talked amongst themselves, within themselves, just like Simon, just like the people at Simon's table in his house. And they said, who is this that can forgive sins? Who can forgive sins but God only? And Jesus, perceiving their thoughts, He said, all right, let me answer you what you're thinking. He says, what's easier to say? Man, rise, take up thy bed and walk, or to say, thy sins be forgiven thee. They don't really give him an answer. But friends, the answer is obvious. It takes the same power to do both. It takes the same power to heal the sick as it does to forgive sins. It takes the same power to forgive sins as it does to raise the dead. It takes the same power for all these things, and that power comes and is from God. You know, all these people who claim to be faith healers, and if you have enough faith, I can heal you. What I want them to do is I want to take them and I want to tell them, I have faith, I've got great faith, and if you tell me you can do it, I believe you. And I want to take them out into that cemetery and let them start raising people out of the grave. They're never going to take me up on that. You know why? They can't do it. But if you can really tell a man, arise, take up thy bed and walk, and heal him, then you have the power to raise the dead. You have the power to forgive sins. And Jesus is basically showing them, you've said only God could have this power. Let me show you that I am God. He says unto the young man, arise, take up thy bed and walk. And he arose, made up his bed, and walked out of the house. Therefore, thereby declaring that he is God. When he tells this woman, thy sins be forgiven thee. And everybody at the table is just confused, mad, upset about what's going on. Jesus, understanding that, says to the woman, here is what that means. This is the last verse of Luke 7. He says, thy faith hath saved thee. Go in peace. I want to make a couple of comments about this last expression. How it is that this expression is here, and then hopefully bring this to a close. As you all heard Brother Luke say last weekend, there's no reason to... No, that wasn't... No, y'all didn't hear this. This wasn't Brother Luke this weekend. This was Brother Michael Hadaway Wednesday night at Pleasant Plains. All right, I'm going to tell y'all something y'all hadn't heard. Brother Michael was talking Wednesday night at Pleasant Plains, and he talks about how Peter, in the middle of 1 Peter, says, finally, brethren. And when you look at that, he'd been talking for about, you know, two and a half pages. He still had about two and a half pages to go. So whenever a preacher says finally, or in conclusion, just look at the watch, look at the clock. However long he's been up there, he's got about that much more time left. I promise you it won't be like that this morning. I will not be up here 35 more minutes. The point is this. If you bring all this home and you start looking at what this expression means, he says, thy faith has saved thee, go in peace. Simple question. Biblically speaking, were those woman's sins already forgiven? Answer is, yes, they were. Have to be. Because before the foundation of the world, if she is one of his children, she is loved by him, chosen by him, predestinated to be conformed to his image. In a few chapters later, her sins are going to be laid upon Jesus and put away, according to God's law and justice, upon the tree of the cross. However, by Jesus telling her her sins are forgiven, she is being given something that she would not have had otherwise. And you and I, as God's children, are going to live with Him in heaven without fail. We're going to live with Him some sweet day because of what Jesus has done. That's it, plus nothing. But I want something right now that's not necessarily a guarantee. I want something now that I'm convinced Simon didn't have. Now, I don't know if Simon was one of his children or not. I'm rather inclined to think that he was, but I don't know that. I'm not going to try to prove that one way or another. I don't really know whether the Pharisee in Luke 18 was one of his or not. I'm rather inclined to think that he was, but again, I'm not going to try to prove that. Doesn't matter. What matters is this. What this woman is being given is the same thing the publican got in Luke 18, because after the Pharisee gets done praying with himself, and he gets up and he leaves the temple, the Pharisee's standing there. He wouldn't so much as lift up his eyes to heaven, but smote upon his breast and said, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. What does Jesus say about him? He says, this man went to his house justified rather than the other. You and I do not justify ourselves in the sight of God based on what we do or what we don't do. But we do justify ourselves in our own eyes, in our own mind, in our own spirit, by what we do and what we don't do. Now, there's two ways we justify ourselves, and I assure you that one works out a whole lot better than the other one. The first way we justify ourselves is we self-justify ourselves. We convince ourselves we're either not that bad, others are worse, things aren't really, you know, I'm not really as bad as some people think I am. I'm really doing okay. Now, we've already talked about that. I'm not going to labor the point, but friends, self-justification never, ever works. Even if you fool everybody in the world, you'll never fool him, and I'm sure you're never going to fool everybody in the world. You know who the last person is to see through something? The one who's guilty. You know, Simon didn't even see in this illustration that Jesus gave him that he was one of the ones in the illustration. When Nathan comes to David in 2 Samuel chapter 12 and tells him the story about the rich man and the poor man having one little ewe lamb, the rich man having a multitude of flocks and herds, David doesn't even realize that Nathan's telling him about himself. I mean, and David's so mad, he even basically writes his own death sentence. He said, the man that hath done this thing shall surely die. Guess what, David? You just said that you should die. You just said that you are guilty under the law of death. Who's the last person to see problems? The one who's guilty. I mean, let's be honest. Who really misbehaves the most? Your children or other people's children? You come home, you know, they really ought to take care of those children. I mean, I saw an absolute brat at the barbershop this morning. I don't know him by name. I don't know who his mother is that had him at the barbershop. I know she's a Bulldog fan. She was decked out in red and black, had a Georgia scarf, had a Georgia toboggan, a Georgia coat. I mean, she's ready for Monday. I'll just go ahead and tell you that. Don't know who she is. So I'm not speaking ill of people. I don't even know who these people are. But I'll tell you this. If I've heard a parent tell their child, this is the last time I'm going to tell you this, and they've done it about a dozen times, I don't believe you, and I'm pretty sure that child doesn't either. No charge for that. If you tell your child the last time, 12 times, the child knows this is not the last time. Anyway, what's my point? My point is this. It's very easy for me to sit there in the barbershop for an hour or two and say, that woman needs to do something with her son. It's a little harder to come home and say, what do I need to do better with my own children? It's easier to see it with others than it is with yourself. And how is it that we see with ourselves what we need to see? How is it this woman was able to see some things that she couldn't have before? How is it she was able to gain something that she didn't have before? I assure you, when she went to Simon's house, she went so in fear. She went so not knowing exactly what was going to happen. And friends, there are many things in life that we're going to not know exactly how it's going to happen. But if we do the right thing, it doesn't really matter what the circumstances are. We will find something we would not find otherwise. Jesus says, you're going to go down to your house justified. Just like that publican in Luke 18, he says, thy faith hath saved thee. Go in peace. How did this woman come? Yes, she came not knowing exactly what was going to happen, but she came in faith. Faith in what? Faith in herself? No. Faith in that the one that she was going to see is who he says he is, can do what he says he can do, and is verily going to love her. Friends, you and I should have the kind of faith that he is who he says he is. We can go to him where he is. His promises will stand, and he loves us no matter what. He says, thy faith has saved thee. Saved you from what? Saved you from all the problems that you had before. He's saving her in the sense, not that she's going to become his child, but he's saving her in this sense. The world may look down upon you. The world may judge you for the rest of your life, for the kind of life that you've lived. But friends, whether the world looks poorly at us or not, whether the world thinks highly of us or not, it matters little in regards to how the Lord looks at us and how the Lord views us. If the world hates me and God smiles upon me, I'll take that every day. It's going to be tough sometimes because we always want people to like us. We always want people to think well of us. But friends, if it's a decision between God and the world, we ought to go with God every single time. He says, thy faith has saved thee. You're going to be justified. What is she going to have? She's going to have something she wouldn't have before. He says, go in peace. Do you want peace? Do you want contentment? Do you want joy? Do you want happiness? I mean, does anybody going to raise their hand if I say, do you want hard times? You want hatred, bitterness, malice, and envy in your life? I mean, unless somebody's just really, really off their head, I mean, they don't want those things. They want peace. They want joy. They want contentment. They want to be happy. How is it that we find that? Do we find it in what goes on around us? Do we find it in the people around us? Do we find it in the things this world can give us? Or do we find it in one who has promised to always go with us? We can find peace through him and in him in a very unpeaceful world. I don't remember who I said this to this week. I said it to somebody, but you're all going to hear it. Now, one of the things that one of my fathers in the ministry, Elder Bill Walden, told me many times is he said, you cannot control many of the circumstances that you live around. He said, but what you can control is whether the circumstances control you or not. You know, I can't control sometimes whether somebody gets sick or not. I can't control, obviously, if somebody dies or not. I can't control the problems of this life. I mean, most of us, when we pull the lever every 4 years, don't feel like we have much control in the government that we have. But you know, we can either be controlled by those circumstances, or we can continue following and looking to Jesus, who is in charge of all those circumstances. This woman could not change, really, anything that she had been. And friends, whatever you've done, you can't change it. Whatever's happened in your life, it's done. It cannot be undone. This woman was known to be a sinner. This woman's life is a repute. It was history. It was in the books. It was past. I mean, there's nothing she can do about it. What is Jesus telling her? You can go in peace starting right now. And how does she go in peace? She goes in peace the very same way that she gained the peace that she found that day. And that peace is walking by faith, living by the faith of the Son of God. You know, when that woman who was taken in adultery in John chapter 8 was brought to Jesus, what was it that Jesus told her at the very end of that lesson? When he rises up from the ground and all of them have departed in shame, he says, "Woman, where are those thine accusers? Hath any man condemned thee?" And she says, "No man, Lord." He says, "Neither do I condemn thee. Go and what? Go and sin no more." How does this woman find peace in the days to come? By not doing what she did before. One of the things that Brother Vince prayed in his prayer this morning, prayer that I have prayed very much in recent days, is help me this year to not sin like I did before. To not commit the same kinds of things that I know how they're going to end because I've done them before. Help me not to do these things in the coming year. Help me to do better at the things I can do better at. Because friends, I can assure you, this woman, if she had basically left the house this day and she had gone back to the very same life that she'd lived before, that peace that Jesus had, that descended upon her, that Jesus gave her, it would not have lasted. It would not have endured. And whenever we leave the house of God, whenever we leave the house where Jesus is, and friends, we may say that, you know, there's a bunch of Pharisees in the house of God. Well, sometimes God still comes and eats with them. Aren't you glad of that? I mean, I'm glad that Jesus came and dined at the Pharisees' house. And if any of us are Pharisees, I'm glad He still comes and dines with us. But how is it that we find peace? It's that whenever we go our way, whenever we leave the house of God and go back out in the world, we don't do the same kind of things we've been doing. This woman's life is going to have peace and be better off. She's going to feel the forgiveness of her sins from her perspective if she continues to have a faith walk towards God and not live the kind of life that she lived before. For us to have the kind of lives that are going to have enduring, resting peace. For us to have the kind of lives that have enduring, resting joy. For us to have the kind of lives where we feel the love of God upon us at all times and all seasons is to go by faith, walking in courage and strength, having our loins girded about and our lights burning, to us have the kingdom of God and His righteousness first in our lives. For us to have Him and what He's done foremost in our mind, in our heart, in our spirit. And whenever these things are put in their proper place, friends, the world will begin to pale in comparison. The world will begin to pale just by all the things that we see in God. You know, one of the things that I look forward to every working day of the week is I look forward to seeing Robins Air Force Base in my rearview mirror. You know why? Because I've left the fantasy world and I'm going back to the real world. Now, some people say the fantasy world's great. It may be, but sometimes the rules just don't make sense and I want to leave that crazy place for a little while. Some of you have worked there. You know what I'm talking about. One of the things I love to see whenever I travel to Texas, it's not just seeing Texas in front of me, it's seeing Louisiana in my rearview mirror. And if you've ever been to Louisiana, it's called Lousiana for a reason. It's lousy. I mean, I don't know who lives there. I don't know who would want to live there. If anybody here is from there, I apologize. But friends, it's just a dreadful place. The roads are terrible. It's nothing but swamps. The people are weird. They eat stuff that grows in ditches. I mean, it's just a strange place. And sometimes, friends, we need to see what's in front of us, and we need to see that what's behind us is fading in the rearview mirror. Friends, I want to tell you, whether we see it or not, this world is fading. This world is going away. This world is decaying every single day. That's scary to some people. I thank God for that. Because every day, this world decays a little more, and heaven gets a little bit closer. Every day, the world waxes just a little bit lighter, waner, and heaven should get a little bit brighter in our lives. This woman came with things in front of her, and she left with those things behind her. You and I need to come to Jesus. And yes, we have problems, but when we bring Him those problems, let us leave that place by faith with those problems behind us. If we do that, our faith will save us. We will go in peace. And we will feel the weight of our sins being lifted as we find that perspective of forgiveness. Friends, perspective is a very powerful thing. I know there's people in this room that probably thought 2017 was a great year. I'm sure there are probably people in this room that thought 2017 was a rotten year. And you know why it is? Depends on what happened to you this year or last year. Some of you will go into this year and think it's a great year. Some of you will go into this year and think it was a rotten year. Why? Your perspective on what all happens. But may we all, no matter what happens to us in our lives, understand that through Christ we're more than conquerors. That through Christ we can do all things. And that because of Him, every day can be a great day. Every year can be a great year. You know, when the psalmist says in Psalm 124, about verse 18, he says, "This is the day which the Lord hath made. We will rejoice and be glad in it." I know he was speaking about the day of Christ, but friends, every day is the Lord's day. Every day is a great day. Every day is one more day, potential day of serving Him in newness of life. And friends, I want us to go in peace. I want our faith to save us. I want our faith to bless other people. And I want us to feel our sins being lifted from us. I want us to feel our sins forgiven. I know they're forgiven, but I want to feel it. And for us to do that, we have to love Him so much that we realize He had to come so far for you and I, and we had nothing to give in return. But now that He's given us everything, may we show our thanks by praising Him and worshiping Him all the days of our life. May the Lord bless you, is my prayer.